Today's episode is called, How Do You React in the Face of a Storm? Namaste. Welcome to Swamiji the OG. I'm so happy you're tuning in to today's episode. This podcast is for people who want to learn how yoga can empower their lives both on and off the mat. I will share classical yoga that's been modernized just for you. We are on this journey together, so let's get started. It's a fact of life. There's going to be bright days and there's going to be dark days. But how do you react to them? It's easy to react positively when everything's going your way. But how do you react when there's a big storm, when you're angry, when somebody does something wrong or what you perceive as wrong? How do you react? Do you let the storm pass and go on with your life? Or are you really shaken by it? That it lives on inside you, continually coming back up in your mind, waking you up at night, creating stress. Today, we're going to discuss some key methods that can make the difference between being flooded with emotions or being able to see more clearly and move on. If you've ever studied yoga, you may have heard of the Yoga Sutras. The Yoga Sutras are little phrases in Sanskrit that you could write probably a whole book on each phrase. But one of the first of the few Yoga Sutras is the definition of yoga according to one of the great yoga scholars. And this definition is yogash chitta vritti nirodha, which means that yoga happens when we can control our mind, when we are undisturbed by all of our thoughts. A vritti is like a whirlpool. I used to go river rafting, and they always said, watch out for the holes. The holes were whirlpools, and they could suck down a whole raft full of people, and you would have difficulty getting out and might be sucked totally under the water. I like to think of the mental vrittis like the holes when I was river rafting. We have these patterns of behavior, and when these patterns arise, we get sucked in. And it takes a lot of energy to extract ourselves. It takes a lot of awareness to be able to keep flowing along. Think of a lake. I grew up on a lake. If it's clear and sunny, you can see deeply into the lake. You can see the little fish swimming around. You can see the little stones on the ground. You can see lots of things beyond the surface. But if a storm comes and there's torrential rain and wind, the water becomes so disturbed that you only see the storm and the effects of the storm. The bottom even gets stirred up, and even after the storm passes, there's silt and it's difficult to see beyond the surface. This is the way we are. It takes a while for that silt to settle down, for us to regain our composure. So many of us have found that meditation can help. And I know some of you right away will say, meditation, I can't meditate. I tried to meditate once, and I couldn't stop thinking. Well, the first thing to realize is that meditation is not the process of stopping the thoughts. In fact, a lot of times when we meditate, we're sitting there or lying down, we practice, we become peaceful, and then we get up and we go back into our lives and the storm strikes, and all that meditation sometimes is forgotten. And we continue to react in the same old ways. Or we don't practice at all, and we bounce from one storm to the next, not even finding those moments of peace. So the first myth that I want to dispel is that meditation means stopping your thoughts. You're not going to stop your thoughts. It's the job of the mind to think. And it does a darn good job of it, doesn't it? In fact, the process is not about stopping the thoughts, but finding space between you and the thought. This is called being the witness. So when you find that space between you and the thought, however small that is, you can begin to cultivate the appropriate reaction to the thought. You have a little space. You can see the thought without immediately reacting to it. The vrittis are patterns of thoughts, the whirlpools of thoughts. And there's positive ones and there are negative ones. Of course, we want to keep the positive ones and we want to create new positive ones that will replace the negative ones. How do we become the witness? How do we find that space? This can be done as a formal meditation practice. But just in day-to-day life, we should practice more awareness, see ourselves reacting, feeling ourselves reacting. This is commonly referred to these days as mindfulness. In classical yoga, we say awareness. To really understand how to cultivate this space, this ability to see without so much reaction, has to do with the mind. And the mind has many parts. Most of us just think, this is my mind. But in classical yoga, we talk about four parts to the mind. And those four parts are actually in Sanskrit called the antarkarana. Antar means inner. Karana means instrument. So the mind is the inner instrument. Our mind is what we play throughout our lives, controlling our thoughts and actions. So I love the definition, inner instrument. In this particular style of yoga that I'm most familiar with, we talk about four parts of the mind. The first part of the mind is called manas, the instinctive mind, the part of the mind that you're most familiar with, the part of the mind that's in there chatting away all the time. It's the part of the mind that perceives the sensory input. It's measuring and judging. It's the process of thought, counterthought. You know this part of the mind. It's the one that right now might have wandered off and is thinking about something else other than what I'm saying. It might be trying to judge what I'm saying. That makes sense. That doesn't make sense. It's the one that we're the most familiar with. We're continuously thinking, and this part of the mind changes from moment to moment. Thought, counterthought. A friend of mine had been in the ashram for years, and when he left, he came to the United States, and he went into one of these big superstores. And he was so overwhelmed by the sensory overload of everything that he saw. And he said it was really difficult for him to see so much, because in the ashram, you take your plate to the kitchen, they put food on it, and you eat it. There's not really a choice. You either eat or you don't eat. Makes life simple. He said he was struggling because there were so many choices. And then he reached the wall of milk. As he tells the story, there was a whole wall of milk. He couldn't believe the different kinds of milk. Whole milks, skim milk, 1%, 2%, goat milk, coconut milk. I mean, it's endless. I know you've all had this feeling. There's so much to choose from in our culture. And this creates a certain frenetic nature to our mind, and we start engaging even more in thought, counterthought. Which one should I get? Maybe I should try almond milk this time. Well, but this one is sweetened. I don't think I want the sweetened one. Maybe I should get the unsweetened coconut. Oh, but do I choose vanilla or do I choose the regular? This endless thought, counterthought, strengthens the part of the mind that we really don't need to strengthen anymore. We need to get past our likes and our dislikes. And in fact, the mind becomes so dissipated sometimes in these situations that it just saps all our energy, and we have what is now commonly referred to as decision paralysis. So we're spending a lot of time in the chatterbox mind. It's important that we learn the other parts so that we can find the part that allows us the space to be more proactive in our lives rather than reactive. The second part of the mind is called citta. And citta is the consciousness, the part of the mind that stores all of our past experiences right up to this moment. It is the memory. And it's a substratum of the mind and mental power. So when you're trying to choose the milk, your mind is looking at citta as well and trying to give citta some ideas, and citta is trying to give manas some ideas so that you make the right choice based on memory. The third part of the mind is your sense of I-ness, the sense of ego. Not the ego like I'm better than you kind of ego, but just the sense of I-ness. I'm different than you. And again, we tend to strengthen that through our likes and our dislikes. The most important part of the mind that we need to learn about in terms of being able to actually be more proactive in our lives and less reactive is buddhi. Buddhi's the one who makes decisions. So buddhi's the one that says, you just came here to get milk. Get this milk. And you pick up the milk and you go on. It doesn't get weighed down so much by all the other parts of the mind, depending on what information you're giving it. So, you know the expression, garbage in, garbage out? If you're giving a lot of bad information to buddhi, buddhi will make the bad decisions. The decision might be faulty. So how do we strengthen this part of us, this witness, this capacity to see things as they really are and make the better choice? How do we become a more positive force in the world? How do we stop letting every drama of our life rule us? Because what happens when we get sucked into the whirlpools, sucked into the dramas, is that we forget our yogic lessons when we need them the most. Our energy is weak and we just get swayed and pulled in all different directions. And we end up playing the same role again and again. We keep reacting the same way again and again. And then after the fact, we look back and we go, why does this keep happening to me? Why can't I change? What am I doing wrong? What can I do to make this pattern end? One thing we need to do is to strengthen our energy, to strengthen our willpower, and let the mind become stronger and not so dissipated, not letting the energy go everywhere. And this requires a bit of discipline, learning how to strengthen our will and determination, and requires a lot of practice. One of the best ways to start this practice is so simple, really simple. You don't have to have a yoga mat. You don't have to sit cross-legged. All you have to do is practice stopping. Close your eyes. Don't close your eyes now if you're driving, though. Close your eyes. Be still and take one slow, deep breath. And then open your eyes and start again. That one slow, deep breath can be like rebooting your computer when it's acting up. It's a way to reset. One of the practices that you can do that's anytime, anywhere, for any length, is simple breath awareness. Simple breath awareness, being aware of your breath without changing it, aware of the natural breath, you know, that breath that's going in and out, all day long, all night long, your whole life long. How often are you aware of it? When you become aware of the breath, you are connecting the prefrontal cortex, the thinking brain, with the part of the brain that is primitive, that doesn't require thought, the part of the brain that is automatically keeping you alive by breathing in and breathing out. Those connections between the thinking brain and the primitive brain actually go through a part of the brain called the limbic system. And think of the limbic system as your emotional brain. The emotional brain that just reacts quite often rather than being connected to your thinking brain. So the limbic system has different parts of it. And one of the most significant parts that is important is the amygdala. The amygdala is a little part of the brain in the limbic system that's essential to processing your emotions and to perceive emotions in other people, especially fear. So when you do breath awareness on a regular basis, if you practice a breath awareness meditation, this can help prevent the amygdala from just reacting, taking control, and overreacting with strong emotions. Natural breath awareness is a fundamental practice to a lot of Eastern practices, Zen Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, yoga meditation. A lot of these have natural breath awareness as the foundation of the practice because it's very hard to be aware of your breath without changing it. You become aware of the breath, and right away you think, oh, I'm not breathing very deeply. Maybe I should breathe deeper. You take control. Instead of just watching, learning how to just watch. That learning how to just watch is an important part of being less reactive. If you start watching the breath and don't change it, then what happens? You watch a few breaths, then the mind starts thinking, what's for lunch? I have this in the fridge. I could stop on my way home and get this. the mind takes off. Manas, chatterbox mind. Thinking, thinking, thinking all the time. When this happens, you have to go, oh, I'm thinking, back to the breath, and take the awareness back to the breath. The amygdala, this little part of the limbic system, is so important in terms of whether we react without thinking or whether the information goes beyond the amygdala to the prefrontal cortex and we start to think about and see what our reaction could be. There's actually been MRI studies that have shown that just after 8 weeks of a course of mindfulness practice of natural breath awareness, just 8 weeks, the amygdala appears to start shrinking on MRI. And as the amygdala shrinks, the prefrontal cortex, that's more associated with our higher brain function, such as awareness, concentration, decision making, that area actually becomes thicker. 8 weeks only. So the practice of natural breath awareness can be instrumental in overcoming fears, to be able to start controlling the reactions, anger, flight, fear. And we start to use the thinking portion of the brain in a way where we see what's going on. We see the emotions as they come up instead of just spewing out all over the place. And then we can gain some element of control. As we become the witness, the part of us that is never changing, the part of us that's not judging, the part of us that has our best interest in mind, when we can become the witness and practice it over and over, because you're going to need to practice it over and over, once we do that, we stop being so reactive and we start living a better life. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you learned something useful. You can find me on Instagram at Atmarupa Saraswati, on Facebook at Swamiji the OG, or on my website at atmacenter.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. And I'd love to see you share your thoughts, ask questions, or leave a review. See you next time.